War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, 15 November, Year of Our Lord 2019, Episode 30, live in the Breitbart Embassy on the John Fredericks Radio Network. We're going to give a couple shouts in a second, but I got Raheem Kassam from UKIP and the Brexit, a great victory. Jason Miller, Chief Strategist, Communication Strategist for the Trump Campaign 2016, and the initial Communications Director during the transition. I want to go quickly to Raheem and Jason. We've got breaking news. Obviously, things are happening this morning, folks, a little earlier than anticipated. Raheem, you want to tell us what's happening right now?
Yeah, we have Marie Yovanovitch, the former ousted ambassador to Ukraine, ousted 3 months before she was naturally going to leave her position anyway.
90 days. That's what it's all about. 90 days.
She has arrived at the Intelligence Committee. On the screens right now, Adam Schiff and Ambassador Yovanovitch getting ready for the testimony to start. Was should have been started about 10 minutes ago. Running about 10 minutes.
The historic second day of the impeachment inquiry into Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. Opening day, Jason, didn't have the numbers. There's a discussion: is it boring? Is it too technical? What's going on? By the way, Raheem is going to live stream. Listen to this and break any news that happens. Particularly how tight her opening comment is. We've heard from some of the top media communication strategists out there are saying you want to tighten this and fire off the football today.
Yeah, and I think today's going to be a little different than our first day of testimony on Wednesday. And the fact that Wednesday, when we had Taylor and Kent come forward, is very factual based. We saw the very long meandering openings from both gentlemen where they laid out very detailed foreign policy specifics. And what they were trying to do there is essentially undercut President Trump's foreign policy. I think what you're going to see today is a shift at trying to undercut President Trump on behavioral issues, trying to undercut him on, well, I think we'll see very much an emotional display from.
Why emotional?
Because former Ambassador.
Are you picking on a woman? Is that what this is? Why is it emotional?
No, I think it'll be because it's been shown that former Ambassador Yovanovitch said that she was very personally hurt by the alleged smear campaign that was attacked her. So she will be talking about
bullied.
Bullied. She'll be talking about her personal feelings about how she was dismissed 3 months ahead of time. And again, that's what this is about. And so we're going to see a career unelected bureaucrat who's was very upset at the way that she feels that she was treated.
And technically it's 90 days. She was let go essentially 90 days before she was going to rotate out of the spot anyway.
You're the ambassador to one of the most important flashpoints as far as national security is concerned. So we keep being reminded by the Democrats right now. And you feel bullied because some people were saying some mean things about you. That doesn't fill me with confidence about the job she might have been doing.
Well, we'll see all that today. I'm sure there's going to be some tight cross testimony. Can we get some background on her so the audience knows? If you're following at home, we're going to deconstruct the ambassador here. And she's had some... I don't think she's really a fan of Trump's foreign policy.
Yeah, no, and I think the important thing when we talk about the backgrounds, whether it's Taylor, whether it's Kent, whether it's former Ambassador Yovanovitch, is these aren't personal attacks. This isn't saying they haven't represented the country in the way that they feel the absolute best, but they have a different foreign policy worldview than President Trump. So again, when we talk about Ambassador Yovanovitch, a couple of things right off the top. Reminder that she has no firsthand knowledge of anything and previously testified even that President Trump was stronger on helping Ukraine than Obama. This was the whole missiles for blankets comparison. And Yovanovitch has also testified repeatedly it's okay for the U.S. to tie Ukraine aid to the country's cracking down on corruption. This is something that's in Congress's NDA legislation. But so as we talk about Ambassador Yovanovitch's background, born in Canada, 1958, her parents had fled from the Soviet Union and the Nazis. She moved to the U.S. at age of 3, became a citizen at age 18. Interesting here, her longtime friend Sigrid Emmerich, who also works at the State Department, said of Yovanovitch, she grew up speaking Russian, so she has that special sensitivity to those issues in Ukraine. And this is from one of her best friends. She graduated with her bachelor's in history and Russian sciences from Princeton. Then she studied in Moscow. So you can see already that this is a personal feeling for her.
You don't want, but Kent, Ambassador Taylor, Ambassador Yovanovitch, you don't want to, I mean, what's the big deal that they have a great love for the country they're going to represent? They are representatives of the United States. What is the problem? There's always this thing on the right that's tinged with a little bit of gotcha that they have spent their careers in there. Don't we? Is this the revolt against expertism of having knowledge? Is the Trump foreign policy run by a bunch of rubes who have no feeling whatsoever for the international, for these different countries, but we, you know, it's just a bunch of deplorables and bib overalls? Is this the subtext I'm getting from you guys?
I think putting a little more finer point on it, there is a very distinct belief among many in the Foreign Service that they were here before President Trump. They will be here after President Trump. They know the natural order of things. They know what the U.S. is supposed to be doing. And therefore, this, again, this bumpkin or this rube, however they want to try to slight President Trump and his supporters, they don't know anything about foreign policy. This isn't the way that things have been done before when, Steve, as you correctly point out, over and over, President Trump won largely on the foreign policy failures for both parties over the past three decades.
What? Let's go back. What did she say in her depositions? Jump in here, Raheem. You can jump in at any time.
I need to jump in with some breaking news coming out of the coming out of the testimony right now. It's the chairman, Adam Schiff's, opening statement, and I quote. Marie Yovanovitch didn't just piss off corrupt Ukrainians. There were also Americans. And he goes on to directly name Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump Jr. in the chairman's opening statement just now when he's talking about corrupt Americans.
Donald Trump Jr., is this trying to equal it with Hunter Biden, Jason Miller?
I think so, and this is
from a media narrative. What is he doing here?
Yeah, he's trying to make this messy, because if we're looking at just the facts, that Yovanovitch has no firsthand knowledge, that Kent has no firsthand knowledge, that Taylor has no firsthand knowledge, that at the core of this, Yovanovitch is upset that she was recalled 3 months early out of a 3-year term. The facts are great for us. This is why President Trump always says read the transcript, because the facts are our friends here. But if you start getting into the how is somebody treated, or play the whataboutism game, this is where they try to muddy
in the
it up.
Early morning hours, as Jason Miller is walking through what his construct for the show is the following day, you said Rudy is dead spot in the crosshairs. What did you mean by that, and how did you know that Schiff was going to go to him right away?
Because they telegraphed this essentially on Wednesday, and also in their media messaging over the last 24 hours, they've very much been targeting Mayor Giuliani, and it's clear that they want, because obviously he's the president's lawyer, and so there's the legal privilege, attorney-client privilege, obviously presidential privilege, so Mayor Giuliani's never going to go and testify. I mean, that would be dumb to force a lawyer to testify against his client, but I think Democrats are going to try to play a little political jiu-jitsu and use that against the mayor and use that against the president and try to pummel him and because he won't be able to go and defend himself in a testimony.
The other thing on messaging, we've got a couple of minutes here in our first segment. By the way, we're very honored to be on a new show clock, and the reason is that we announced yesterday that we're going to be on the Salem Radio Broadcast Network through the good offices of John Fredericks. John Fredericks, the co-producer and really the major domo here, making all this work at in the Breitbart Embassy at War Room Impeachment, which you're listening to. You can also get us on all the platforms. The messaging change yesterday, and Jason, I want you to walk our audience through. This is an information war. This is political warfare at the highest levels. And I know I get a lot of grief from you guys about my obsession with Nancy Pelosi, but she and Trump now are in a throwdown of the two most. You very rarely get the two most powerful political people. This is not a campaign. These are people actually have power. You have the President of the United States controls the executive branch. You have the Speaker of the House that controls the House of Representatives, with the founders set up to be the fulcrum point for our government. And they're both at it in a death struggle here, right? Because she's trying to reverse his election in 2016. She's trying to remove him from office, and she's building a case. They pivoted dramatically over the last 24 hours. Two things. Rudy's won. Mayor Giuliani's won. The other is the message is now bribery. Why have they gone from quid pro quo to extortion? Now they have focused on bribery.
Well, and they're also going to, in obstruction as part of that as well. It's kind of a dual obstruction bribery connection here. And the
bribery will be the crime. Obstruction will be covering up for the crime.
Yes, because they're realizing that their initial attack of the whole quid pro quo is falling flat. And so they're trying to shift this. And I think the American public really needs to pay attention to this, because the way that they're moving around on their targets and what they want to drive to is all over the map. It's because it's not working for them.
Also, bribery is in the Constitution, correct? It's high crimes, misdemeanors. Bribery, I think, is actually mentioned. So they're trying to hone down that this, they're trying to, I think, also revalidate that they are, this is a constitutional process. This is a process that they, that they, that they have, because it started a little slow, and they don't want this to be a policy debate. This, they want this to be high crimes, misdemeanors, bribery, something they can hang on to the Constitution.
Yeah, and their thing too, if you throw a legal allegation like that, then that's what the headlines are going to be. Yes. So Democrats accuse President Trump of bribery. That's not a great headline.
Okay, we're gonna continue with Jason Rahim in a second. War Room Impeachment, Stephen K. Bannon live from the Breitbart Embassy. We're gonna turn in just a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. 15 November, year of our Lord, 2019, episode 30, live in the Breitbart Embassy basement, across the way from where this historic second day of the inquiry into the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. We're on, we're going to be live on the John Frederick Radio Network and Salem Radio Network starting on Monday. For the duration, all the way to the day after Donald J. Trump is acquitted. We're going to get some little shout-outs here about where else we're covered and how you do it. But, Raheem, I think we have some breaking news, and we want to do this. The ambassador is there, but let's go back and play that opening clip. I think it's quite important for people to understand. What we're trying to do is give you to try to coach you up in political warfare, particularly information warfare, which the Democrats are trying to do, and finally the Republicans and the President Trump and the team are fighting back.
What is Adam Schiff introducing Maria Yovanovitch.
In her time in Kiev, Ambassador Yovanovitch was tough on corruption. Too tough on corruption for some, and her principled stance made her enemies. As George Kent told this committee on Wednesday, you can't promote principled anti-corruption action without pissing off corrupt people. And Ambassador Yovanovitch did not just piss off corrupt Ukrainians, like the corrupt former Prosecutor General Yuri Lutsenko, but also certain Americans, like Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump's personal attorney, and two individuals now indicted who worked with him, Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas. Lutsenko, Giuliani, Fruman, Parnas, and others, who would come to include the president's own son, Don Jr., promoted a smear campaign against her based on false allegations.
That was Adam Schiff's opening statement.
That is Jason Miller. That is trying to blunt the Hunter Biden. They're saying, "Hey, you call Biden, we'll call Don Jr." Is this what this is? Tick for tack?
Well, I think it's that, but it's also them trying to frame what the Republicans are going to be coming out after Ambassador Yovanovitch for. So, for example, one of the big things around the time that that she was dismissed, and this is the criticisms that came from Mayor Giuliani and from Don Jr. and a whole host of others. I mean, they're just throwing out those two names because they're close to the president. But it was that she was that she had given Ukraine's top prosecutor a list of names she did not want to see prosecuted. Now, this claim has been disputed. We're going to see this fleshed out in the hearings today. But this is really at the central point, and this is why she felt there was the smear campaign against her. But Republicans are going to be driving this point very strongly. And the one other thing, too, and again, this is just the speculation. I expect this to come up in today's hearing, but there were allegations that Yovanovitch had blocked Ukrainian officials from traveling to the U.S. to hand over evidence of Obama Democrat misconduct during the 2016 election.
This is key.
And this is going to be a massive.
Is this a tinfoil hat right wing crank a piece of information, or is this going to be a major theme that's going to be developed?
I think that's what's going to be fleshed out here today. I think that
because Schiff said it right there. What you're seeing is they're saying, "Hey, we've seen over the last 48 hours, 72 hours, you're trying to make this about policy, and particularly that Trump is interested in corruption. We're going to raise that. She's actually the one interested in the corruption. She was trying to weed out corruption, and that quote unquote. And I know we're in a family radio network, but I'll use what Schiff said. That pissed off corrupt people." The corrupt people in the Ukraine, and he implied the corrupt people in the United States government, being Rudy Giuliani and the President of the United States.
Right.
Am I not correct in that?
Yes, and they know where the attacks from the Republicans are going to come from, so they're trying to get ahead of it. They're trying to frame it. Now, there's a risk here that it could elevate this, so then this entire debate today revolves around whether or not Yovanovitch had withheld this or sent along this names, list of names she didn't want to see prosecuted, or was she trying to stop Ukraine officials from traveling to the U.S. to talk about election interference in 2016. This could become the key takeaway today. Now, I know most in the media...
This is not about a server. This is not about anything like that. This is about the ambassador and the Obama administration trying to block... actually investigations into corruption from officials who were trying to get that information to people in the United States.
Yeah, and I think, Steve, one of the important points that you talked about in your interview on Vice News last night, which, by the way, you did great going head-to-head with Elizabeth Landers.
Did I get your approval? I didn't. You know, when you're in the moment, you don't know. I didn't get a chance to see how it turned out.
Very good. I mean, look, obviously, Viceland is going to have their little bit of left to center, little bit of snark in there.
It's good. I like the show, though.
Look, it's very well produced.
Yes.
They've won a number of awards, and they're tough. If you can go into their environment and go toe-to-toe and rumble with them...
We have to. That's why I so admired you on CNN. You got to go into... This message has to be taken to MSNBC. It's got to be taken to CNN. It's got to be taken to HBO.
But the point that you made, Steve, last night that I think it's glossed over far too often, it wasn't just the Russians who were messing around in 2016. There were a whole host of people. And again, it wasn't even just 2016. I mean, even Mitt Romney talked about election interference and going back to 2012 and in years previous. This has been going on for years.
Let's go to anything else on the ambassador, Raheem. How's this starting off for the ambassador? Because this is a big one today. You can see thematically what they're doing. They're trying to blunt this thing about Trump being concerned about corruption. She's actually the one concerned about corruption, right? And they're starting to put out... You know, this is all the president's men. They're trying to do the Woodward Bernstein, Rudy Giuliani, Don Jr., and they're trying to connect Trump through Giuliani to the two Russian Ukrainians that have already been indicted.
We just had the ranking minority member, Devin Nunes's opening statement there, and he started off by reminding Americans of the opportunity cost of the impeachment process before going on to lay out the details of Alexandra Chalupa's
work. Did he actually use that phrase, opportunity cost?
Well, not the phrase, but he reminded people that there is a funding deadline for the government coming up next week.
Oh,
he reminded them that there is a USMCA going on right now, things that we've said on this show before.
You're saying, but as the business of the nation is put aside, as the whole Capitol Hill and this entire city is galvanized by this historic event, this constitutional crisis that Nancy Pelosi is forcing the country into over the holiday season.
What he called the Democrats' Watergate fantasy, actually. He then went on to talk about Alexandra Chalupa and the links with between Ukrainians and the Democrat National Committee back in 2015-16. Also brought up again how they would like to hear from the whistleblower, and again mentioned that there's been not enough talk about Hunter Biden and what Hunter Biden was doing in Ukraine during all this time.
How much effort do you think today, Jason, if you were advising them, will they make on this counter thrust about the DNC? And about involvement of the Ukrainians in DNC. This is one that's been dismissed. If you're on CNN or something like that, it's been dismissed, you know, out of hand as tinfoil hat. How much evidence do you think it is, and how much do the this is where you need the killers to push this into the narrative.
Yeah, and I think also the point about the Ukrainians interfering by going after Paul Manafort. I think that is, in my opinion, that's the more solid ground.
Walk the audience through that.
Yeah, so this was back during the campaign when there were Ukrainian officials who said that this quote-unquote ledger was found, where essentially... This black ledger where Paul Manafort didn't work for the Party of Regions, a lot of work overseas, and they essentially said that he had, walk out with like $1 billion in cash or something like that, which obviously then started the spiral that had Manafort ultimately removed from the campaign. But this is
one of the reasons, is one of the reasons he's in prison right now.
Correct.
Right?
Then it turns out that the ledger was fake. So this was political opponents in Ukraine doing this. And keep in mind, I mean, Steve, I'd been on board for a couple of weeks. This was a couple of weeks before you joined the campaign. So we're very early stages of this. But this was the figurehead of a campaign, of a presidential campaign for major party who was dumped simply because of this article and this news cycle.
Yeah. In fact, when I stepped in, Paul was going to stay as chairman the first day I took over on the 14th. You remember? Okay. Paul was going to stay in, and then with the Ukraine thing broke. Okay. Stephen K. Bannon, War Room Impeachment. At the basement of the Breitbart Embassy. A big day today. Another 5 o'clock. Showing tonight. We're going to take a short commercial break, pay some bills. When we get back, we hope that Reince Priebus is going to be in the house, trying to get Reince over here right now. So we'll see you in a second.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. We're live. It's the 15th of November, the year of our Lord, 2019. We're live in the Breitbart Embassy right across the plaza from the Capitol with this historic hearing on day two of the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States, is taking place. We're going to go back to Raheem momentarily for any breaking news on her, on the ambassador's opening comment. We're now honored to be joined by Reince Priebus, was our wingman when he was chairman of the Republican Party in the victory, and then became the chief of staff, and I think one of the finest guys I know and fantastic individual. Okay, Reince, you always look at the stuff with a jaundiced eye. You've got to forget the first day. Did it accomplish what the Democrats wanted? They're in day two, and they look like they've repurposed. What's your assessment of day one?
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes the Democrats made is that they they leaked out all of the supposed juicy information over the course of the several weeks. And so when the impeachment hearing started, you know, I'm sitting there watching it, and it's pretty stale old news. I don't think there's anything new there other than some hearsay evidence on a, you know, an overheard phone call that you guys have talked about. So, no, I thought it was a flop. I thought it was boring. I thought that all the information was already known. I don't think people are paying attention to this. I know it drives the liberal media crazy. But as of now, you know, we can only speak for what we know today and previously. I just don't think people care. And it drives people mad. But people are not paying attention, and they brought nothing to the table to change the conversation.
McGinley said, we have Bill McGinley here, the cabinet secretary that did such a great job in the White House. Bill was here the other day and says, it's pretty obvious at the end of the first day, he believes we're now in a war of attrition, that this is going to grind through, and it's going to be the president's supporters in the Republican Party versus the opposition party media, the Democrats, in every day. You got to win every day.
We live in a different political environment today than we did in the early 1970s. We live in probably one of the most vitriolic political environments in modern history. I think we can all agree on that, right? We have 435 congressional districts out there. And in 2018, in this environment, less than 10% of those 435 seats were in play, meaning that 90% of every Republican congressman has a better chance of getting reelected than waking up tomorrow, and 90% of every Democrat in Congress has a better chance of getting reelected than waking up tomorrow. There's no incentive, zero, to compromise on not just this issue, but any issue. So, well, I'm kind of perplexed as to why anyone believes that there's going to be some crack in the egg here anytime soon.
And Chairman, I want to go to that point because we've seen a shift also in the Democrats' messaging over the last couple of days, where everything had been quid pro quo, and then now it's to obstruction and bribery. Tell us your thoughts on that. David Rivkin wrote a fantastic piece in the Wall Street Journal today.
We're going to get this up on the site here.
And we actually have David Rivkin joining us Sunday for everyone who tunes in over the weekend. But tell us your thoughts on why the Democrats are shifting into these obstruction and bribery claims, and will it even stick if no one's paying attention?
Well, you guys did a great job with him. I think it was a Saturday morning when you first started the show.
On his first piece, it was behind the paywall of the Wall Street Journal. That's why we wanted to get him out and talk about it. And that, I think, changed the direction.
It did. Between that and Gates and some of the other little things that happened early on, I think it. But this gets to the point of what I've been saying passionately, which is not everyone in Trump land agrees with me, but I think I'm right that we need to start focusing in on the legal theories behind the defense of Donald Trump in this case, because we don't know what we don't know. And if someone makes a charge of bribery, and if witnesses somehow come forward and they say, well, you know,
like the OMB guy tomorrow,
the OMB guy, the person that's going to come on the hearsay evidence and say, I heard the president say this, whether he said it or not, who knows? But at some point, I think someone's going to make that case. Well, what's your answer? What's your answer? That if X, Y, and Z happened, let's assume it happened, what's your response on the defense to say, no, wait a minute, even if X, Y, and Z happened, that's not bribery. That's not a quid pro quo. That's not X, Y, and Z charge. here's my point. If you don't get prepared for that and someone makes that claim, even if it's a lie, what are we going to have? 4 days of crickets? Nobody's going to have a response? Where's the brief? Where's the legal theory behind the defense?
So you think that should be pushed out, gentlemen? You think that should be pushed out now or wait for the trial? That's what I'm...
Well, look...
You think you want to see the White House counsel or an independent party write that, either Rifkin on the outside or White House counsel write that and push it out today?
Well, I think we should either today, tomorrow, soon. Because what you don't want to do is be caught flat-footed. Now, to the defense of... the White House and everyone involved, maybe they've got it written and it's in a secret vault somewhere and they're just waiting. I hope so. I would think so. But in the meantime, I think folks like you all and the guests that you've been having on this show need to get sort of mentally prepared with their legal defense of all of these charges.
So we got Schultz tomorrow, former White House counsel Jim Schultz, and we got Rifkin on Sunday. So we're going to develop this theme thematically.
Can I make one more point?
Sure. Go ahead. You make them all.
The other point is the reason why this is very powerful for the president to do what we're advocating here is that when you defend yourself, this is a case of state of mind. There's no consummated wrongdoing in this case. We all agree that. There's no the money was released. There was no exchange. And so therefore, the question is whether or not someone has a bad state of mind. So they're putting the president's state of mind on trial. When you
This is your mens rea argument?
Yeah, because when you put someone's state of mind on trial, that defendant has an opportunity to say, wait a minute, here was my state of mind. And in order to illustrate my state of mind, I need to call Hunter Biden, Joe Biden. I need to call other witnesses to the stand in order to defend my state of mind. I need people to understand my state of mind in order to defend myself.
Yeah. So let me jump in here and push back a little bit. And maybe I'm getting you. Maybe I'm not. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on radio sometimes. But are you pushing it towards a false binary choice, and that it's either either or, and that the phone call was perfect, or we need to look at the mens rea? Can we not be talking about those same thing or both of those at the same time? So by the time we get to Steve's point, we have David Holmes, who's the Taylor deputy who overheard this phone call, or supposedly, which we all have been in that situation where we're trying to pick out what was said on a phone call, and no matter how much the person on the phone is yelling or screaming, you're getting bits and pieces. Or even talk about Mark Sandy, the career OMB official who's breaking protocol here and coming forward. Neither one of them are going to have firsthand evidence of anything. We've already gone down the people who do have firsthand evidence when we talk about a Tim Morrison, we talk about a Kurt Volker, we talk about a Gordon Sondland. These folks have all said that President Trump did nothing wrong and there was nothing there. So I just want to kind of get your point.
Before we get to that, we're going to take a short commercial break. And when we return, we're going to get to the answer to this because I think it's critical. It's a short commercial break. We'll return on War Room Impeachment in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment
on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back. War Room Impeachment, 15 November, Year of Our Lord, 2019, Episode 30. This is live, Breitbart Embassy across the street from the Capitol where all this is taking place. Have Raheem Kassam, Reince Priebus, my wingman, other wingman, Jason Miller. We got a lot of ground to cover and not much time. Raheem, what is happening? Her opening statement is going on and on and on. I take it they didn't take Jason Miller's and Bill McGinley's recommendation to keep it tight and powerful.
No, but she is keeping it powerful. It is a pretty damning statement from Marie Yovanovitch up there, and she seems very confident in the things she is saying. Going in there and saying she has no agenda, talking about how her service is an expression of gratitude, because remember, she was her parents were born into the USSR, and her mother fled Nazi Germany. There's also a lot of talk about Rudy Giuliani in her opening statement. I'm going to go through a couple of points here. She talks about her background being caught in crossfire between the president and parliamentary forces in 1993 in Moscow. She says she's establishing her bona fides as somebody who's put herself on the front lines for the United States. She then goes on to state how she thinks that the Ukraine is a good area of potential for the United States, that Ukraine could move out of the Russian orbit.
She says that there is a good commercial partnership that could be done with
Ukraine. What is so powerful about this?
And well, I'll tell you exactly why.
I'm getting sleepy.
I'm not getting sleepy. Okay, this is fine.
You think it's powerful?
She's building a case here, okay. And I'm building this. Allow me to finish.
Okay.
She talks about all of that, her background, coming under fire, going through the whole Ukraine deal. And then she moves on to the anti-corruption efforts. She says, I was leading the anti-corruption efforts to bring Ukraine out of the Russian orbit.
That's a throwdown.
In terms of U.S. long-stated U.S. policy, she says that our anti-corruption efforts got in the way of other people making profits. And she's directly making a link to these Giuliani associates in saying that. And then she talks about the Do Not Prosecute list that she was alleged to have leaked. She says that never happened. And then she goes on to attack the president effectively for removing her. She says, ambassadors are the personal representatives of the president. If we are kneecapped, we are hindered in doing our duties. It's a pretty compelling
story. She used the word kneecap.
Kneecap.
So she's building a narrative. What do you think of that, Rance, before we get back to your answer? What do you think about how she's laying this out?
Well, I mean, it doesn't change the facts. I mean, the facts are good for the president, and all of this information, while might be, might sound bad or improper, doesn't change the facts that there was no exchange, and the president's state of mind was in a good place, and they can't prove otherwise. So, to your question, Jason, that you put to me before the break. I think you can have it both ways. I think you have to argue that there was nothing wrong with the call, but in the alternative, even if they say what they say is true, this is why this is not a high crime or misdemeanor. An alternative to that, this is why this is not a campaign violation. Alternative to that, you know, just like you would in a motion to dismiss. Look, sooner or later, fellas, this is going to go to the Senate. And someone is going to have to make either a motion to dismiss, or they're going to have a 6-week trial where at some point someone is going to make the argument that all of this falls flat for a variety of legal reasons. The reason why this is so important is if you look at, people want to talk about the president in the transcript saying, the section in the transcript where it says, can you do me a favor? What's really important there is who the president asks the president of Ukraine to talk to. Who did he say to talk to? He didn't say Giuliani. He said talk to the Attorney General.
Right. It was Zelensky who brought up Giuliani.
Right. But that's important because it goes to state of mind. Because the president is thinking about the fact that he's got an Attorney General that's investigating the origins of the 2016 election. And he says talk to the Attorney General.
Huge.
That's
huge point.
A very important point when you're arguing state of mind in a case. And that's why I'm telling you we shouldn't be afraid to talk about this stuff. It's not that it defends the president.
So, Reince, the way that you put that together that I thought was genius because, again, going back to the call, read the transcript. When you go through there, again, it's Zelensky who brings up the multiple ongoing investigations. It's Zelensky who brings up Drain the Swamp. Trump brings up Attorney General Barr, just as you said. It's Zelensky who comes back and brings up Mayor Giuliani. So your point is spot on.
We're going to get to that when we get back. Since we ran a little longer last segment, we're going to jump out here, sell some ads, and then come back. Stephen K. Bannon, Reince Priebus, Raheem Kassam, Jason Miller, War Room Impeachment will return live in just a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam, War Room Impeachment. On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
War Room Impeachment Live, 15 November, year of our Lord, 2019. Add Reince Priebus to that, the chairman. Let's go to Raheem Kassam for a live update on her opening statement.
Yep, that's Maria Ivanovich has now concluded her opening statement on Capitol Hill. And it was a pretty powerful opening statement, establishing her credentials as somebody who's literally taken fire in her service to the United States, somebody who is from a foreign background, a USSR background, her mother fleeing Nazi Germany. She walks through the corruption things that were taking place in Ukraine, the U.S. policies that she was trying to put in place to stop those things. And it would have been an incredibly compelling testimony if what was on trial was America First foreign policy. Oh, but it is. That is what's on trial here. That's exactly what the testimony was against. It wasn't against the president. It wasn't about the phone call. It wasn't about abuse of power. This was Ambassador Yovanovitch mostly talking about herself.
So, Jason, you think she walked
this
into
foreign
a,
policy
she,
doesn't
do
work?
Do you think she opened up, like the president tweeted yesterday, now we can have a deeper policy debate about what this is?
Absolutely, because she's talking about the role of the ambassadorship. How our allies and strategic partners around the world look at the ambassadors, how important this is. This is that worldview that was before Trump, they're going to be here after Trump, and they put it up on different pedestal. One quick thing I'd say today, watch Elise Stefanik, the congresswoman from upstate New York, very closely.
She's fired up.
And if she comes after Yovanovitch on this point that this is not about America First foreign policy, this is the allegation that President Trump did something wrong, this is where we're going to see the fireworks and a star player today for the GOP.
What else do you think we should watch for today, Chairman?
Well, I think you should watch for, you know, I think people need to sift through the noise, sift through the case that's being made here that, well, I wasn't treated well, I worked hard for this country, and I should be able to keep my position or the way I look, it doesn't matter to the case. First of all, the president has the authority to put whoever he wants in as ambassador, whether you like it
or remove him,
whether it's nice or not. I mean, it just it doesn't matter. So I think that's what people need to really look to and kind of get through all of this smoke that they're being thrown.
Last thing,
there.
As chief of staff, I'm confused. Why is someone from OMB's professional staff that I think still works at the White House, why are they going up and being deposed tomorrow? You got to help me out here. I don't get this. Well, I thought Pat, didn't they send out a memo? No more cooperation, nothing like that. What's going on?
The entire position of the White House is that this is an unconstitutional process. There's no due process. There's no method of calling witnesses. No cooperation. No documents.
So
no,
how's an OMB
witnesses?
Guy going tomorrow? How's an OMB guy going up there? Answer that for me, Chief.
I don't get it.
Huh?
I just don't get it. I don't
seriously.
Know.
Seriously. How
don't
is
know.
This happening?
Because, you know, if you don't file an injunction to stop someone from appearing.
Someone smart said this a week or so back.
A guy named Reince Priebus.
Reince Priebus
on this very show a couple weeks ago. Okay. We've got Jim Schultz from the White House Counsel's Office tomorrow to go through these issues. Then we've formally from the White House Counsel's Office. Then we have David Rifkin himself will be on the show on Sunday. Two heavy-hitting lawyers following up Reince Priebus. That's three in a row, like Murderers Row of the Yankees. This is Stephen K. Bannon. You're listening to War Room Impeachment. We're going to have a special edition this afternoon at 5 o'clock to summarize the testimony today.
Warroom.org.
Warroom.org. Go to warroom.org. And starting on Monday, we're in the Salem Radio Broadcast Network. I want to thank John Fredericks and everybody here for helping us produce the show.
War Room. Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon.